When Siddhartha became a Buddha, he also achieved the state, or the goal that Buddhists call nirvana. There's a lot of confusion about nirvana in our world, of course, and Buddhists don't make matters any easier when they insist that only a Buddha can really know what nirvana actually is. Certainly not us. How could I know such a rarefied and elusive state? For the rest of us, it may be enough to know simply what the word itself means. I suspect actually that this will take us closer to the experience of nirvana, to understanding it as a concept and experience, than many of us would suspect. Nirvana means to extinguish or to blow out. So a Buddha is someone who not only has understood the causes of suffering, but has blown them out. He no longer suffers from the ignorance and desire that feed the fire of death and rebirth. Now, as you think about this ideal, as you think about the story of the Buddha's life, you might ask yourselves why Buddhists find this to be attractive, particularly the concept of nirvana. The answer goes back to the idea of samsara that we've already discussed. Buddhists took the problem of death and rebirth very seriously. In fact, the concept of nirvana is a gauge of how serious the issue of samsara was that we spoke about last time. It was only a great sage who could escape the cycle of death and rebirth. In a more positive way, you can also sense how nirvana involves a sense of freedom and calm that's missing from ordinary life in this world. The Buddha no longer had anything to worry about once he had achieved this breakthrough, this experience of his awakening. For him, all the storms of samsara were over. He was free from that, and he could live his life in the awareness that he would never come back into the cycle of frustration, in the cycle of samsara again. Tradition says that the Buddha was tempted to stay under the tree of his awakening and enjoy the experience of nirvana for himself. But instead he got up and he walked to a town called Sarnath in the outskirts of the city of Benares, the great Hindu pilgrimage site on the bank of the Ganges River. And he taught about his awakening to a group of ascetics. This event is called his first turning of the wheel of the law, and it represents, in many ways, the beginning of Buddhist tradition, the beginning of the time when the Buddha's teaching came to be expressed and handed on by a group of followers. From this point on, the Buddha had a long and fruitful monastic career, walking the roads of northern India, teaching to kings, peasants, merchants, converting monks and nuns, and presiding eventually over a thriving and rather complex monastic order. There are many wonderful stories about this phase in the Buddha's life. Each of us, I suppose, has a favorite. For its combination of psychological vividness with a dose of the miraculous, I particularly like the story of a guy named Angulimala, a monk whose name means a garland of fingers. When the story starts, Angulimala is a pious student, eager to please a demanding teacher. This may actually be the real reason why I like it. It's kind of a nice story about teachers and students. Angulimala is a wonderful and dutiful student, and he does everything that he can to please his teachers, and of course, he arouses the jealousy of his classmates. They go to the teacher and begin to tell some stories about him that aren't terribly attractive, and so the teacher decides to get some revenge on Angulimala by calling him in and saying, "Listen, there's one more payment I expect from you before I will give you my final teaching." Angulimala says, "Oh yes, great master, what is it? What can I do for you?" And he says, "I want you to bring me the fingers of 100 people you have killed for yourself, and then I will give you my final teaching. And Angulimala, ever the dutiful student, sort of packs up his books and splits for the countryside and begins to kill people and collect their fingers. At first, he hides them somewhere in the forest, but eventually he begins to lose them, and so he collects them together, according at least to one version of the story. He begins to collect them together in a garland around his neck, hence this rather grisly name, Angulimala, the Garland of Fingers.